So welcome and aloha. Today is Tuesday, January 19th, 2016. And this is a teleclass with Maureen Poena O'Shaughnessy. And my guest speaker today is Jenny Lee. And we'll be talking with Jenny just shortly. For those of you who may not be familiar with me and my work, I do a number of things. I've been teaching Reiki, a form of alternative healing, for the last 20 years, based in Honolulu, but travel and teach quite frequently in different places on the mainland. And I also do some intuitive coaching, is what I call it, for lack of a better phrase, and work with people to help move past their limiting beliefs and also the thought patterns that keep us stuck in old experiences in our life that we would rather change. And I'm also an author, and I'm delighted to have our guest Jenny Lee here, who I met a few years ago when she came to one of my Reiki classes, and it was great having her in the class. So welcome, Jenny.
Hi, Maureen. So happy to be with you today.
That is great. So you have a brand new book out. So we'll go into details about it, but just tell us briefly about your book.
Sure. I have been a practicing yoga therapist for the last almost 20 years, and this is my first book. It's called True Yoga, and the subtitle is Practicing with the Yoga Sutras for Happiness and Spiritual Fulfillment. So I look forward to sharing with you and our listeners today a little bit more about what the inner practices of yoga are and how they bring us to greater joy.
That's great. And the title of our teleclass today is Inner Peace. And so our intention is to make sure that all of you on the call today and those who listen later to the recording get some tangible things that will help support them and support you in gaining some inner peace or finding it more frequently or having it more a regular part of your life. And I think I'd like to start and before that too, I wanted to mention, we have a really lovely bonus gift for one of you today before the call ends, and it'll be within the hour. We'll keep our call within an hour. But before the call ends, I'm going to do a drawing, and one of you will get a free copy of Jenny's brand new book that's literally hot off the press. So this is really exciting. And talk a little bit, Jenny, first, before we go into the book and present-day time, what your path or journey with yoga has been like. I know there are many people who practice yoga, and again, you know, most of us think of yoga as hatha yoga and the postures, but I know there's more for you. So give us a little bit of your background with yoga and what got you started and whatever you feel like sharing.
Sure, and this really goes along with our theme of inner peace today because I, like so many people, started with an introduction to yoga on the physical level and really appreciated how it made my body feel and how it gave me more energy and all of that. But it wasn't until, and I don't know if you can hear the siren going by, but there it goes. It wasn't until I hit a really rocky patch in my life that I began to realize that there was way more to yoga than the physical practice. And this was many, many, many years ago now, but I was in a difficult time in a marriage, and I was in my second pregnancy, and the doctors were telling us that the child had some issues that might not allow her to make it all the way to term. And we decided to go ahead with the pregnancy anyway and embrace her in unconditional love. But it was right at the end of my term, 9.5 months, that she passed away. And so it was obviously a very difficult time of loss and sadness. And so the way that I dealt with that, well, first I crawled into bed and didn't get out for about a month, but as I was laying there, I was just, you know, reaching in my mind and in my heart for any tools that I could reach for. And my yoga practice was what initially got me out of bed and moving again. And I would go to my mat and try to do some movements, and basically I would just curl up in child's pose and cry. But over time, I got interested. I heard teachers talk about the Yoga Sutras and other yoga philosophy, and so I started getting curious about what might be there. And so I started reading, and what I found was a lot of instruction and practices that would help me change the nature of my thought, manage the emotions that were coursing through me, sit in a calmer, more objective place as I would cry natural tears of loss. And the more that I studied the what I call the deeper teachings of yoga, the more I found, you know, tools to help me get back on my feet and really embrace life again. And so that was really how it started. And this was many, as I said, over a decade, well, almost 15, 20 years ago now. And as I moved forward in my career in yoga, opening a yoga studio and working with students, I started to see how many people would store emotion in their bodies. And so the physical practice would address that to a degree. But then as I would share some of these deeper teachings from yoga, people would just start to open up about their stories and what they were going through and the stress in their life.
Beautiful.
And so I found...
I want to interject here for a moment because you just reminded me of something that I had forgotten I'd experienced. And that was at a yoga class in the L.A. area with when I was teaching there and staying with one of my students, and she would go and... the yoga instructor there, he actually taught, he had hatha yoga classes and taught meditation. But what I started to hear and experienced in, when I would go to classes with my student in California was wherever there was resistance in my body, there was typically emotion being held in my body. And that was a new concept for me. And I don't know that I was initially, especially since I only would come to the classes, you know, a couple times a year because of my travel, but I really saw that. And that was an aha moment for me to realize mm-hmm. that the limitations in my body were a reflection of a lot of the inner stuff. So anyhow, that was just to sort of validate
yeah.
that I get what you're saying.
No, absolutely. Yeah. And I'm sure that you see this in your Reiki practice as well when you're tuning yes. into the energy body and recognizing where the restrictions are. I mean, we are holistic creatures. We are mental, physical, emotional, and spiritual beings. And so all of these layers are interrelated. And so when we talk about inner peace and how do we cultivate that, we really have to be addressing ourselves at each one of those levels. And there are so many beautiful alternative energy practices to do that, and we should utilize every one that's available to us. Obviously, the one that I've specialized in is yoga, and the combination of the physical practice and witnessing what's happening emotionally, internally is very, very powerful and can really lead us to profound freedom if we are diligent in our self-inquiry.
I like that you said profound freedom. I mean, that just sort of popped out at me. I actually like that. That word calls to me even more than inner peace. And maybe because I get to experience some level of peace because in my own Reiki and meditative practices. But that freedom is a whole nother level of peace, really. Yeah.
Yeah. I had a teacher who shared that there's and what he called negative peace and positive peace. And I'll explain that because I found it very interesting. In meditation, which is an aspect of yoga practice, we can train ourselves to concentrate and get quiet. It takes a while. It's not easy.
Yes.
But
yeah.
we then sort of enter this state of the void. And this is what mm-hmm. you would call negative peace, meaning that we've taken away the stress. We've kind of come to a neutral zone where there's not a lot of disturbance or static in the mind. But then there's nothing really there. And so then people, what happens in any vacuum, and we see this with addictions or anything else, if
yeah.
you take something away and there's nothing left, immediately the old behavior, the old thought, the old whatever is going to rush back in. So we need to get beyond that vacuum place of emptiness, or negative peace in his terminology, and move to the state of positive peace, or that state of joy, freedom, you know, bliss consciousness that the Yoga Sutras talk about.
Yeah.
And so it's an evolutionary process. I mean, I think inner peace and freedom are on a spectrum, but you're right.
Mm-hmm.
One is a little bit deeper than the other. And so we don't need to be content with just taking the stress away. We want to go for the full Monty, right? The full freedom and joy here.
So that's great. So you've mentioned sutras, and I have been exposed to them in over the year, you know, the sutras such as Patanjali's Yoga Sutras. But would you expand on what sutras are for some people who I'm guessing might not be familiar with what they are?
Sure. So the Yoga Sutras, you mentioned Patanjali, and that's correct. They were created by a sage over 2,500 years ago by the name of Patanjali. And the sutras are basically very small, condensed summaries of spiritual truth. And each sutra has different levels and layers of meaning that touch upon both body discipline, mental control, our spiritual evolution. And so these little nuggets or aphorisms, they're often called, were given in the text, ancient texts, the Yoga Sutras, as teachings. And over the years, people have retranslated them and reinterpreted them many times, but the essence of them holds the entirety of kind of the journey towards self-realization, or the realization of our true nature, who we are beyond the human story that might be going on, but the inner soul self that is trying to express itself through each one of our individual identities.
Beautiful.
Does that help with a definition of sutra?
It does. And I'm going to go off on a tangent that might not really be all, you know, where you're going to go with it, but it caught my attention, and I'm just having a conversation with you right now. And that is one of the things that I had heard, and I've heard it from more than one place, about Sanskrit as a language. So the sutras that I was introduced to, I was taught as Sanskrit rather than the translation. And that when Sanskrit is by many acknowledged as the oldest written language, but that it's a very pure language, in that when you speak a Sanskrit word, it holds a particular vibration. Everything we speak does. And even in the Hawaiian culture, there's a lot of awareness about the energy of what we speak, the mana of our words and so forth. And so that what I have come across is the fact that when you speak a Sanskrit word or phrase, that you are actually activating the energy or the vibration or frequency of what it represents when it's in Sanskrit.
Right.
And that fascinated me, because, again, I think about energy and vibration all the time. So I just wanted to go off on
that tangent a little bit. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right, Maureen, and it is fascinating. And to listen to someone who actually knows Sanskrit speak a mantra or a sutra is very, very powerful. Unfortunately, for those of us who don't speak Sanskrit, to try to pronounce some of it is a little bit dangerous, because I don't know if you've ever had this experience, but I have. I used to know a little bit of Italian, but there's a couple of words that are pretty close. One is the word for year, and the other is a curse word. And I mispronounced the word once, and the person across from me looked at me like, what are you saying to me? So I don't try to offer my teachings in Sanskrit, because I'm not a Sanskrit scholar. And in I make that really clear, that the descriptions that I'm giving of the sutras are my understanding based on the study of others who have a greater knowledge of the original Sanskrit and who have offered those translations over the years. Obviously, it's always best to go closest to source, and if you have the opportunity to study with a teacher who has you know, who really knows Sanskrit, there is that beautiful darshan or blessing of the mana, the energy within the spoken word. And I think one of the easiest accessible points for Sanskrit for most of us is in chanting, because oftentimes we're able to recreate a sound as we sing rather than speak. And so a lot of the Sanskrit mantras are put to sound now, and even in kind of modern musical contexts. And so that's why you see a lot of Sanskrit chanting in yoga studios these days, because it does. It holds a lot of power. You're right.
Yes. Yeah. And in, you know, in Buddhist cultures, most of the chanting is done in the Sanskrit and so forth. So, yeah, I just found that delightful. And and again, another level of connectedness.
Absolutely.
So talk a little bit about, talk about the creation of your book, the inspiration and creation of your book, and then we'll go into more of the meaty stuff.
Okay. Well, this was, has been a seven-year process, and I liken the writing of a book to meditation practice, because if you're looking for instant gratification, don't do it. It is worth it, and over time and effort and consistency, dedication, it can happen. So to any of you who might be aspiring writers or practicing meditators, hang in there, never give up, and all effort is definitely progress along the path. But the idea originally for the book came about when I was teaching in my studio in Boston. And many of the students were asking me questions about how to apply some of the things that I would talk about in yoga class, how they could read more about it or apply that to their life or, you know, get some more information about it. And I, as I would assign them reading from some of the kind of classical translations of the sutras, they would often come back and say, wow, okay, wow, this is a little bit too much, kind of over my head. And they just didn't have time to really delve into the study as I, as a teacher would. But, you know, it's my profession, so of course, it's different. They're going off to jobs and families, and they don't really have time to study philosophy at 9 o'clock at night. So I wanted to write a book that would be accessible to the average student, the average teacher even, who just really doesn't either have time or inclination to go into a lot of the philosophical study, but who wanted to take the meat of what's called the eight limbs of yoga, which is a section of the Yoga Sutras that is what the focus of my book is on. And it's the meat of the inner yoga practices that we can apply to our daily lives and really come to deeper levels of peace. And so perfect for our theme today. And the way the book is laid out is that it explains each one of these sutras, and then it gives practical daily applications, things that you can remember to do during your work day or with your families. It also gives questions for reflection. So take that teaching, but think about it a little bit and ask yourself, how does it apply in this case or that case? And then affirmations, because I strongly believe in the power of positive thought and affirming the principles that we're trying to bring into application in our lives. So I tried to create a very tangible, pragmatic tool for people to get the sense of these teachings and then really put them into practice.
That sounds wonderful. So now you've created a little craving in me, so I know the listeners too, for some meat. So there were some things that you were said you could share with us on this call that we could take away with us and help help our process in reaching inner peace. So what can you share on that? What would you like to share on that?
Yeah. Okay. Well, in the eight limbs of yoga, the very first teaching is on ahimsa. And ahimsa, it translated, means nonviolence. But when we think about this, I mean, most of us, I'm sure all of us on the call, are not violent people. We're not out there hurting others. But this teaching is really, it goes a level deeper, and it speaks to how do we create peace it's not just about not harming, it's really about actively creating peace. And this begins within our own self, because we can't possibly do anything for another or on the outside if it's not within us already. So we start simply by watching our thoughts and recognizing when we're having thoughts of self-criticism, self-judgment, judgment of another, negativity, self-doubt, worry, anxiety, all the things that go through our minds, we start by catching them. So just witnessing it, catching it, and then beginning the process of change right then and there in our thought. Thought is the realm of cause. It's what begins the process of something coming into manifestation. So if we're continually thinking negative or critical thoughts, that is what we're going to bring into manifestation in our lives. And so we change the experience at the root of its cause, which is thought or belief, and we just simply turn it around. And that's why affirmations are a very powerful practice, because let's say you have the thought, for instance, I'm overweight, I look horrible in this outfit, no one's going to find me attractive, you know, these kinds of things that are very natural to most of us, certainly to most women. And so as soon as you catch yourself thinking any one of those self-critical thoughts, you change it and you choose a thought that is a self-affirming thought. I walk into the world with my inner beauty shining. Or I choose to present myself with love in my heart today. I am not just my body. I am who I am within, and that is a beautiful, beautiful being. I mean, you can make these up as you go along. It's going to be different for everybody, but you find something that you can connect to that's positive, and you just change it in your mind, you know? And so over time, this starts to build peacefulness in the mind. And then that changes how you act towards others. It changes how you react to others. So let's say somebody is short with you in the coffee line or something at Starbucks. Instead of thinking, what a jerk, you know, blah, 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 10 thoughts that go off in a tirade of criticism, maybe you choose a compassionate thought. Wow, I bet that person's really hurting inside today. They must have had a tough night. Maybe they didn't sleep well. They wouldn't be critical like that to a stranger if they weren't hurting in some way themselves. Bless them, you know. And it just creates an ease inside of you that softens the whole experience of walking around in the world. I mean, the world is just not a really easy, friendly place sometimes. But when we walk out into it with this peacefulness inside our being, we start to attract a different vibration. Going back to your comments about vibration, energy, we start to interact in a different way and facilitate more peace in our environments and in our relationships.
I like that example. It's great. And I want to backtrack a little bit because you talked about ahimsa and nonviolence, and then you talked about critical thoughts. And I think for some people, the idea of criticizing themselves as, a form of violence against ourselves is new. Mm-hmm. And I just want to kind of emphasize that. And a lot of my work that I'm doing in my intuitive work is, you know, assisting people in transforming those thoughts as you're teaching also, and just having people recognize just how prevalent our self-critical thoughts can be, and abundant and prevalent. You know,
it really is a form of violence to ourselves.
Yeah.
If we think about our inner dialogue, and we imagine saying all those things to our friend or our partner, and then we think, how would they react? Would they want to be with us? Would they like us? Would they feel good about themselves? And the answer is no to all of those questions. Well, then
exactly.
We shouldn't be speaking that way to them, and we shouldn't be speaking that way to ourselves, because it doesn't foster the ability to care for ourselves and respect ourselves.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's almost like this epidemic in our culture. Of this, so, this negative thinking. So, the awareness and the practice. So how do people, other than choosing it, is there, what else can you help people with in just being more aware and conscious? Is there anything else you can add?
Well, one practice that I really like to teach people is the practice of, it's called metta meditation or loving kindness meditation. And it's a very simple practice. We could even do a moment of it together right now so people get an experience of it.
Great.
Sure.
So do you want to demonstrate it or talk about it and then demonstrate it?
I'll just give one brief line to explain it, and then we'll go into it together. Okay.
Perfect.
So loving,
thank you.
Loving kindness meditation is simply sending a positive, kind, loving, peaceful thought to yourself and to or to another. So that's what we're going to do together right now. So let's just take a moment, and listeners, if you can just, you know, get comfortable wherever you are, take a couple of deep breaths, and relax your body. Whether you're sitting up or lying down, it doesn't matter. Just relax and let yourself come into a state of pure present moment awareness. So you're just right here, right now, listening to this message of peace. And then repeat to yourself after you hear me make these statements. Repeat them to yourself. So, metta meditation, loving kindness. May I be at peace. Just repeat that silently to yourself. May I be at peace. May I be free of suffering. And then call into your mind someone that you deeply care about. Maybe it's your child or your partner, could be a pet. May that being be free of suffering. And repeat that silently. May they be at peace. And then think of someone else, maybe that's a little bit farther out in your circle, a colleague at work or a neighbor. And wish them the same. May this person be at peace. May they be free of suffering. And then the more challenging one, think of someone that you currently have maybe some conflict with and wish that person the same thing. May this person be at peace. May they be free of their suffering. And then collectively together, let's offer this meditation to the world, which has so much strife in it right now. So may the world and all beings in it be at peace. May the world and all beings in it be free of suffering. And then to close, come back to yourself, maybe even placing one hand over your heart. And repeat silently to yourself, may I be at peace. May I be free of my suffering. And this little example is a practice. You can see it can be done in just a moment or two. You can do it anytime, anywhere, for anyone, always beginning with yourself first, moving through those you choose to send that to, and then coming back to yourself as an anchor. And this is the loving kindness meditation or metta meditation.
That was really beautiful. Thank you. Thank you. And I've heard the statements before, but I really like how the process of the starting within ourselves and then moving in the outer circles. That was lovely. Thank you.
And I'll share a quick story about that if you have time.
Please.
So I had, I had a real strong conflict happening with a neighbor years ago near my yoga studio, of all places. And it became so uncomfortable that every day when I would walk into the yoga studio, I would just sort of cringe in thinking about having to pass this person's door and, you know, feeling her energy and negativity. And so I started doing this practice. And although nothing changed on the outside in terms of the relationship with this person, she didn't change her behavior towards me in any way. But in doing the practice of loving kindness meditation and just offering that to myself first and then to her as I walked past her door and then back to myself, I was able to enter my day in the studio with a greater sense of peace in my being. And that it was very different from the month or two prior when I would go in and just be all agitated and worried that I'd run into her or have some conflict, you know, come up. And it really changed how I was able to stand in relationship to the situation. So this isn't necessarily going to change anything on the outside of your experience, but it is going to change the inside of your experience.
And that's all that really is. There really is.
Yeah, exactly.
That is beautiful. And it also reminded me also of some Ho'oponopono practices, depending on which style or approach. But again, it is the getting to that place of wishing someone well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. At the deepest level, we're all connected and we all come from the same source. We share the same breath. And this interchange of oneness, if we recognize it, then we start to break down some of the barriers that really keep us in conflict and in agitation with those around us.
Yeah, absolutely. And it also ties in, as you're talking about it, with some of the things I've worked with the principles of law of attraction. And mm-hmm. again, everything is vibrational, and we are all connected. There is no separation. We're sound waves in the cosmos kind of thing. So, wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
So what would if you were to give just, you know, some kind of advice to to someone who's maybe this is relatively new or people that are you know, in the middle of their stress and so forth, what kind of advice would you give them? Some basic thing.
I didn't
give you a heads up about the question. This is so spontaneous.
I think working with present moment awareness is really important. We tend to get very out there in the future, worrying about stuff or analyzing an issue that might be at hand or even intellectualizing a practice like yoga. We can get mm-hmm. overly connected in the head and not grounded enough in the heart and the body in the moment. So taking simple, deep, conscious breaths is one of the best ways to practice present moment awareness or mindfulness, it's also called, mm-hmm. to stay connected in the now. You know, we can pretty much handle anything in the now, in this moment. I mean, if we're breathing and there's a roof over our head and bombs aren't dropping next to us, we're okay, you know, and one step at a time we can get through anything that's on our plate. But if we get into trouble and we start experiencing real anxiety when we look at the big picture of a problem and we just are way out there with all the eventualities and all the, you know, craziness that is happening or could happen, we can't handle all of it at once, but we can handle this moment. So to the best of our ability, if you can stay here now, and the breath, conscious breathing is the best way to do that. So taking deep, slow breaths, counting your breath, matching the inhale and the exhale so that they're even by, you know, counting the inhale and then counting the exhale. A lot of times people's breath is uneven between the inhale and the exhale, so just bringing awareness to that is helpful. If you are going to pick up a resource, like my book, for instance, I tell students, don't think that you have to read it cover to cover and absorb all of it. I mean, this is a lifetime of study, really, these teachings. So pick it up and look at the index and choose a topic out of the chapters that feels applicable to you right now and just dig into that. And it's so much better to take a small bite and really chew it and digest it. It's just like eating our food, you know, than it is to gobble back big chunks of things and not really process it. So present moment awareness, small bits, deep practice. That's the way to get through whatever challenges are on your plate. And really, we can get through a lot. We're very resilient as human beings. We have incredible strength that is available to us.
That's beautiful advice. Thank you. I could certainly relate. And I love the analogy of you know, taking something like your book or some new knowledge and information and the way we eat. You know, totally could relate to that. So thank you so much. And I'm going to open things up in a moment to, in fact, I will. I'm going to go to the Q&A mode in case people have comments or questions for you. And then while, so what I want to say is if you would like to ask Jenny a question or make a comment, please hit *6 on your phone and you will show up on my screen. There's about a 30-second delay, so it'll take me a moment to see you. So let me... Okay, I think I need to turn lecture mode off because everyone's looking still. Oh, no, that should still be okay. I'm sure it's fine. So, Jenny, if people wanted to connect with you, if they wanted to get your newsletter, I get your newsletter, and things, how would they go about doing that?
Sure, and I'll just say, too, about questions. You know, our questions really help not just ourselves but other people, too, so don't be shy. Everyone has common experiences, so really it's very helpful, not just for yourself but others. But if there's something very personal, feel free to get in touch with me through my website, and that's also the way to sign up for my newsletter or any events that might be happening. So it's Jenny, J-E-N-N-I-E, Lee, L-E-E, Yoga Therapy. com. And there's a sign-up place there, and you can message me through there, and all the information about my book is there, ordering, et cetera. So would love to hear from any or all of you.
Great. Well, we've got some shy people. Oh, you know what? My screen was slow. So there may have been people who hit *6 that I'm not seeing yet, because it just, I hit the Q&A and you heard it on the message, and now it just on my screen turned on. So
okay.
There may be a little bit of delay here from the website. So what do you tell your students when, you know, we want to be more mindful and so forth, and, you know, they say they come to see you. You work a lot. Do you work, before I even get to that question, you work with people one-on-one as well or primarily?
Primarily work one-on-one. Yoga therapy is best directed in this one-on-one session because I can really talk with you thoroughly about the challenges that you're facing or your goals in life at this time, either physical or emotional, spiritual, and then we look very specifically at the yoga practices that would be right for you at this time. And I do sessions on Skype or the phone or in person on Oahu, and classes, I do a couple of public classes, but I primarily work individually with people.
Great. And can you give, I'm trying to think of this question. So if you if you're working with someone and you're working with them one-on-one, and, you know, I typically do too, so, you know, with my, I do some group things, but to really get the progress requires consistent, you know, attention. It's not just a weekend thing and then you're all set for life kind of thing. What do your students find the most challenging that they couldn't do on their own if they didn't have your support? Does that make sense? Did I say the question in a way that Ian?
Well, I think that coming to yoga can feel a little bit overwhelming for a lot of people, especially the physical practice of yoga if someone has any kind of physical restrictions or has never experienced it before. And then also just the inner practices can feel a little daunting too, kind of where to start. So having a guide talk you through what would be right for you in this moment is really helpful. And then I usually offer sort of a homework assignment. Some people choose to do it, some people don't, but it's a nice foundation that they can take away from their session and feel like they have a plan of action, something very specific to practice at home. And then being able to touch base with a coach is always helpful, you know, whether we're training for a triathlon or training for our spiritual evolution, it's helpful to have someone who's walking that path with you and really understands the various things that come up along the way. And oftentimes because I've been doing this for a long time, I can kind of predict what's going to happen at certain stages of the game. And it's kind of comforting. I've had students tell me that it's comforting to them to know that if they are doing this, they might run into this, let's say. Like if you are processing grief, you know, let's say that sense of if I really let it all come to the surface, will I ever be able to get through it? And people avoid feeling all their grief because they're afraid they're going to collapse and never be able to get back up, and they're just going to end up in a hole of despair and non-functionality. And so having been there myself, I can, you know, really tell them, more than once, I should say, really tell them, like, the pit is not bottomless. Sorrow does end, and we are resilient beings, and we will find the tools to recover. And as your coach, I'm here to support you in that process. And, you know, so don't fear the full measure of feeling of, you know, in this case we're talking about grief or of any feeling, really. Hopefully that answered your question.
It did. I wasn't even sure what I was asking, but I wanted a sense of, you know, what, and part of my thoughts are, I think of things like, okay, mindfulness. You know, I've heard and been aware of the concept of mindfulness for a long period of time, being in the present moment, for example, and the reality of how often I'm there or not there is there's a pretty big gap. So working with you does help people, I guess, even just having assignments, I'm sure, would help people get there. But I'm looking at my own self, too, and, you know, and I have practices that help me already, too, and still being in the present moment, even being willing to feel what I'm feeling, even for brief moments, is part of my journey because I'd rather distract myself.
For sure. For sure. So, I mean, twofold. I don't know if there's a question in there, but sort of two thoughts that come up is that the physical practices, and by physical I mean not just postures, but also some of the energy moving practices that are done through breath or visualization, I consider those sort of physical as well as mental, they can help us move into a deeper contact with those patterns of feeling that are being blocked or those places in the body that are stuck retaining emotion that maybe we're not even aware of, or those patterns of limiting thinking like you mentioned. And so part of the facilitation that I offer is just getting people into a greater sense of self-awareness and then offering strategies for when that awareness arises and they're on their own and they're not sitting in session with me, what can they reach for? Because it's like contacting your sponsor if you're in AA. Like if you're about to have a drink, you got to call somebody. You need to have a tool to reach for, a foundation, a rock to grab at. And that's the homework practices are really, what do I do in the moment that I feel this massive wave of grief arising? Well, then we'll talk about maybe some breath practices that can get you through that and allow you to stay present so you can let it go and move it out of your body, but that you don't feel so overwhelmed that you're just not going to be able to handle it.
Right. Oh, that's great. And that really helped the question I didn't formulate properly. Because it's almost like, okay, is there hope? Can we really do this? You know? And I'm going to go to the questions. I've got a question here. I'm going to open up, okay? So hang on.
Okay.
So those are you who have hit star six, you're going to hear unmuted on your phone, and then we'll say hello, and I'll ask for your first name. So it should unmute in a moment.
This is Martha.
Hi, Martha.
Hi. What a beautiful conversation. I'm so glad that I was able to join, and I love the exercise of asking for peace. It was lovely. It was beautiful. It just took me right there. I have been practicing yoga for over a decade, and Maureen is aware of this. Recently, I went through an experience that threw me for about 4 months, and I was not able for about 4 months to experience very high levels of frequency and energy and beautiful sensations during my yoga meditation. And I started doing a challenge with Maureen, and I was able to go back to those levels and those sensations. But my question is, I never saw this coming, that I was going to lose it for 4 months, because I've been practicing yoga for, again, like I said, for about over a decade. But my question is there sort of like, and this is my quality mentality, is there sort of like a metric, or in your experience, sort of like a measure that will tell you, okay, this is week number two of not having a good yoga experience, that will let me know, hey, you're falling off the wagon really badly and you don't have a parachute. Does that make sense?
Well, I think it's really individual, and that part of the process of a deep yoga practice is this cultivation of self-awareness. So as we come to know our patterns of experience, then we're able to catch ourselves quicker if we're, like you said, kind of falling off the wagon. I know for me, if I miss meditation in the morning for more than a day or two, and I will immediately start to feel myself getting short-tempered and
Absolutely.
Very reactive quickly to those around me. And so I just know that that's it. I've got to get back to the cushion. And I'm not sure if that answers your question.
I'd like if you could elaborate a little bit more on what does it mean to be self-aware?
Okay, sure. That's a great question, actually, and there's many levels to it. So when we speak about self-awareness at the first level, and it's kind of like a yoga posture, there's a level one and then a more advanced level and places that we can grow with it. So as we're moving into the concept of self-awareness, we first just need to understand our own feelings and our own thoughts and kind of where they stem from. And so some of this is in the realm of psychology and looking at our history, our personal history, family of origin, the experiences that make up our human life. But then after a while, some people get stuck in those stories and they get very identified with those stories. And so from the yoga standpoint, the teachings of self-inquiry are self with a capital S, meaning the higher self. And how do we tap into an experience of who we are beyond the human story or the human experiences? And this is what we get as we go into practices of meditation, because we're quieting the mind, the psychological mind that is very identified with all the experiences of our human life, and we're tapping into an awareness or a perception of that greater self that is far bigger than, you know, Jenny or Maureen or Martha.
Good. Good.
So is that helpful, Martha?
Yes, it was. Yes, it was.
Great. Thanks.
Thank you.
I'm actually going to just leave it with Martha's question, I think, so that we can do a wrap-up. Thanks, Martha. I'm going to mute you again, okay?
Thank you, Martha.
Thank you.
There. And I want to talk about doing the drawing for your book. So,
okay.
And I forgot to mention earlier too. Before we do that, anybody who is on Oahu, what do you have coming up, Jenny?
Thanks. Yeah. So this Saturday, January 23rd at 6 p.m., we're having a book launch party, and it's a free event. It's happening at Open Space Yoga in their Diamond Head location on Oahu. So anyone who is on the island would love for you to come. It's from 6 to 8:30 p.m. this Saturday, January 23rd, and I will be doing a short talk on the book and offering a meditation practice. And then talking a little bit about the process of writing the book and what true yoga is. And then we're going to have live music and food and festivities and book signings. So would love for any or all of you to join in. And if you're not on Oahu and you'd like to connect, again, my website is jennyleeyogatherapy.com. And the book is available either through the website or on the Amazon. And would really appreciate any feedback that you have to share at any time.
I got my copy on Amazon.
Yay!
Oh, great. Yay! And I will be at the book launch party also. So any of you who I know, please come and join us and say hello, and have a great taste of what Jenny has to offer. On multiple levels.
And I will have books for purchase there as well. So.
Great. Yeah, I'm going to bring mine so Jenny can sign it. It's always lovely. So I think I'm going to do a drum roll now, at least in my head. I can't do it on the phone easily without making too much noise. And I'm going to go ahead and click and do a random click on somebody here and see who gets a copy of the book. Here we go. Hi, who's this? Did anyone hear unmuted? The phone number
hello?
Is, hi, yes, who's this?
Julie,
you just
yes.
won a copy of Jenny's book.
Wow, that's great.
Yes,
thank you. I couldn't tell that I'm talking to you. Okay.
Yes. It's a little awkward on this conference line. So,
yeah.
So if you will stay on the line, then you and Jenny can talk when we wrap up the call. So when I tell everybody else we're hanging up, stay on the line, and you can give Jenny information on how to get a book to you. Okay?
Okay.
And so I'm going to call it a day. I think it's been a really great session, teleclass, lots of really good quality, useful information and some great things I learned too. So, Jenny, thank you so much. Congratulations on your book.
Thank you, Maureen.
Really big thing. Yes. and I'll
well,
see you on
so
Saturday
much.
Evening. Yeah. And, it's a full moon on Saturday too. Perfect.
It's perfect
day
is.
For your book
wow.
Launch. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for all the wonderful work that you offer to the world.
Thank you. Thanks. Yeah. And so that's great. So I'm going to stop our recording. Again, this is Jenny Lee, and you can reach her at her website, Jenny, JennieLee, yogatherapy.com. All right.